Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning will be Burzlaff against Thoroughbred Motorsports, 1325-20. And you may begin, Mr. Cade.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the Court, Nathaniel Cade, on behalf of the appellant Thoroughbred Motorsports. We're here because of the Wisconsin Lemon Law and what Thoroughbred claims were improper jury instructions and a special verdict given to the jury. As the Court may or may not know, with regards to Wisconsin's Lemon Law, there are a couple of prongs for someone to recover. The prong that Mr. Burzlaff chose was he had to make the vehicle available for repair by the manufacturer or authorized dealer before the expiration of warranty or 1 year, whichever comes sooner. And that's WISSTATS 218.0171.
But what I'm curious about in terms of your argument is how your argument takes into account the language of the vehicle's express warranty. And I'm particularly looking at the sentence that says, in certain instances, Thoroughbred Motorsports may authorize repairs at other than Thoroughbred Motorsports dealer facilities. And Mr. Burzlaff, it's not like he just went off on his own and took this thing to Amato Ford. He contacted Thoroughbred. He asked where he should take the trike for repairs. He mentioned Amato Ford. They said okay. They sent authorized parts to Amato Ford. So it seems to me that the warranty contemplated exactly what happened.
There's no doubt, Judge, that he contacted Thoroughbred. There's no doubt that they told him when he expressed an interest to go to Amato Ford, they allowed him to do that.
That's right. They authorized him to do that and indeed followed up their authorization with actions by sending numerous shipments of parts from their plant in Texas to Amato Ford. So I don't see anything in the Wisconsin Lemon Law that prohibits the kind of private ordering, the contractual arrangement that exists here. Thoroughbred said okay with us and proceeded, both in writing and in actions.
Well, Judge, I think you said the key words, contract. There's a difference if Mr. Burzlaff had sued for breach of contract and said, I have a warranty, you didn't follow that warranty and fix it. But he sued under the Lemon Law, and not only is it remedial.
If that's right, your theory seems to be that the plaintiff lost his rights under the statute by following the defendant's instructions. Is that right?
We disagree that it was our instructions, Judge.
You authorized him to go to Amato Ford, right?
Because he called first and said he didn't want to take it back to his dealership.
But you think if he does that with the manufacturer's permission and support, that he's lost his rights under the Lemon Law?
I would say yes. Under the statute, the way authorized dealer is defined under the statute, it has to be someone that is specifically allowed to sell and or repair. Amato Ford was never...
And what does specifically authorized to repair mean? Specifically authorized repair could mean that when the customer contacts the manufacturer says, we give you permission to take your trike to X. I mean, I just don't... Aside from what I think my colleague is implying, that it would be a very strange interpretation of this Lemon Law to say that anybody who tries to cooperate with the manufacturer is automatically disentitled to protection under the law. I don't see where a law with the purpose of the Lemon Law has such a narrow interpretation.
Well, worse than that, wouldn't it just allow the manufacturer then to lie in wait while he's lulling the purchaser into complacency by bringing it to the repairs? You paid for the repairs, you sent the parts to be to the shop to be repaired, and there was communications, it's undisputed, for months. So wouldn't it then certainly be, the manufacturer says, aha, last minute, years, 12 months in one day, no coverage.
I don't think it would be disingenuous, Judge Kendall, because, again, we're talking two different issues. We're talking Wisconsin's Lemon Law, and we're talking the warranty. The warranty could provide coverage for 5 years. The Lemon Law says you get 1 year or the warranty, whichever is sooner. So if the warranty was 6 months, the Lemon Law would expire after 6 months. It's the shorter. But that's not the issue. If he had said, hey, under the warranty, you were supposed to fix it, and you didn't do it. You didn't do the things that you said. That's a different issue. That's a breach of contract. We're talking specifically Wisconsin's Lemon Law. And more to the point, it'd be one thing if we had the standard instructions and had gone to the jury. But what went to the jury in the special verdict was not the standard instructions. And the problem with the standard instructions is it used the phrase repair facility acting on the manufacturer's behalf.
And isn't that exactly what happened, though? It's not as though the judge created it out of whole cloth, but rather comported it to the evidence that was undisputed at trial.
But they weren't acting on our behalf. If they were acting on our behalf, they would have had access to schematics, which they didn't even know were online. If they were acting on our behalf, they would have had people from Model 4 trained to work on these specialized things. They weren't acting on our behalf.
Well, that's what you say, but in fact, you authorized this man to take the trike to a Model Ford. And I would go back to the Wisconsin Supreme Court's decision in Marquez against Mercedes-Benz, where the court says this law, the Lemon Law, reflects a strong preference for the interests of a consumer who purchased a lemon over the interests of the manufacturer. That's instruction from the Wisconsin Correct. Supreme Court about how to read this statute. And I don't see why being authorized to repair something means that you have to have every schematic, everything. Once Thoroughbred authorized him to take it to Amato, maybe it should have said, and be sure that, you know, they get this stuff too.
The key, Judge Wood, is the instructions, repair facility acting on our behalf. As Judge Goodstein noted, there are questions of agency. Well, the jury never, ever had any instructions on agency.
You didn't ask for any more detailed instructions on agency, as I recall.
Judge, we were presented with what Judge Goodstein changed the morning right before the jury came back. So we had brief argument on a Tuesday late afternoon.
Are you saying there was a violation of the rule?
I'm sorry, Judge?
Are you saying there was a violation of the rule?
Of the stat?
Regarding telling counsel ahead of time what the instructions would say.
He gave us the instructions. I objected, Judge, and that we presented to the jury.
Okay.
So...
But
again,
you could have proposed the agency rules. For example, he proposed the instruction, and then you could have said, we object, and the reason is the confusion over the agency we want to argue, so we'll propose an agency to fix it?
I did object to the use of the language, repair facility acting on the manufacturer's behalf, numerous times that the judge said you've made your record on that point.
Okay.
Could I have said, yes, agency? Perhaps. If we had had the instructions the night before, yes, but literally the morning of... It's here's what I've decided to do, and now we're going to go to the jury. So we had an opportunity to object. I did object to the use of that language because, again, there was no evidence that they were acting on our behalf. If you want to talk about the statute says authorized, et cetera, fine. But acting suggests that somehow they're agent. In fact, Judge Goodstein even used the language he said that there was a question of whether Amato even had apparent authority.
So the jury indirectly does, in fact, have this before it. I just think it's a fine distinction, but there's a distinction between objecting to the instruction actually given, which you certainly did. You know, the magistrate judge recognizes that on the one hand, and on the other hand saying, well, we don't like this instruction, but if you're going to go with that, Your Honor, here's this second instruction that we think is necessary in order to present the case properly to the jury. It's the second step that you didn't take. You certainly did object to the first one, and I don't have any doubt about that either. But I think packaged into the instruction that the magistrate judge gave to the jury is the idea, was Amato Ford acting on behalf of Thoroughbred? No question about it.
That might be true, Judge, but again, we're presented the next day with what he modified, so it's not as a question of going back to the office saying, okay, let's add agency. It's
surely
literally
there wasn't any secret that this was an issue, right?
I think it was, Judge, because he said there's no evidence. It's a fact question.
But the whole trial had been about the fact that he had taken it to a Amato Ford. It's not like he all of a sudden decided to drive down to Chicago and bring it to a dealer here that Thoroughbred had never heard of. Every day, I mean, the entire trial focused
Correct.
On the fact that the repairs were being done by Amato.
Both days of the trial focused on
yeah.
the fact that it was being done at Amato, but... Again, repair facility acting on our behalf, that's the agency issue. which was never brought up, that somehow Amato Ford was acting on Thoroughbred's behalf. Yes, they allowed him to go there. In fact, Thoroughbred allowed them to take...
Is it correct that Thoroughbred paid for these repairs?
Thoroughbred paid for everything. Thoroughbred said, even if it was out of warranty, we would have paid for repairs.
Okay, so you paid for the work done by Amato Ford?
Correct.
The jury still had the opportunity, though, if they felt that the agency didn't exist, to rule in your behalf on that jury instruction. Your argument is that you felt that the scale was tipped a bit, but the agency is a clause within that instruction, right?
The agency was a clause, but as I told Judge Goodstein after the jury left and I objected again, based on the instructions that he gave and the special verdict, even though I was sitting at defense counsel, I would rule against my client because I didn't think there was any room whatsoever based on that language. So it was the manufacturer, an authorized dealer, or a repair facility acting on their behalf.
But all you're saying really is maybe the judge erred by not giving a Rule 50 judgment for the plaintiff. It doesn't necessarily mean, so he bends over the other way, lets the jury get this case. I'm not sure that your argument gets you where you want to go.
Judge, I don't know if you want me to answer that. I see I'm
it's
in
It's up to you.
Time.
I mean, you can save your rebuttal time if you want. But
okay, I'll save it for my rebuttal time.
Okay. Mr. Merwin.
Good morning. May it please this court. I am Shad Merwin. I represent Ronald Burzloff, the plaintiff appellee in this matter. I believe that the issue regarding the statute, the Lemon Law Statute 218.0171, in particular sub 2A, that there is confusion by Thoroughbred in that the statute, the language of the statute, has two requirements in sub 2A. Number one, that Burzloff had to notify the manufacturer of the nonconformity, of the problems that he was having with the vehicle. And then a second, that he made the vehicle available for repair, and that is all the statute says. The statute is silent as to who performs the repairs. This was not a Ford Pinto that was being taken to a local Ford dealer. This was a highly specialized vehicle created by a comparatively or relatively small manufacturer with a limited service network. It was established at court that there was only one dealer in the state of Wisconsin, one Thoroughbred dealer. It was never established at trial whether that dealer, which was well over 100 miles away from Burzloff, could even perform repairs.
So wasn't there a fair amount of literature from Thoroughbred indicating some link between Ford and these trikes?
Yes, there was, Your Honor. There was a, I guess you'd call it a sales brochure that was entered in as an exhibit that said, I'm probably going to misquote it here, but it said, powered by Ford, serviced by Ford. And it said that they had permission from Ford to make their vehicles available for repair to Ford dealers. Mr. Burzloff never said, I want to take my vehicle to Ford. When he encountered, and the record is very specific, it's supported by his testimony, and it was never refuted, that when he experienced issues with this vehicle, his first act was, and under the terms of the warranty was, contact Thoroughbred, contact the manufacturer.
Was there a phone number that you called? I mean, how did he do that?
He did, yes, Your Honor, he did have a phone number. Yeah. He had a business card, and I believe the phone number was probably also contained within the manual as well.
So nobody disputes that his initial notification was to the proper people?
I don't believe there is any dispute to that fact, yes, Your Honor. The dispute is whether or not Amato Ford was an authorized dealer, and it wasn't just Amato Ford that he was directed to. As I indicated in my brief, there were other instances of failures of nonconformities, problems with the vehicle, a broken radio. He was directed to take it to a radio repair store. A problem with one of the tires holding air. He was directed to take it to a tire place, a place that specialized in tires.
During the repair process, the Amato Ford people had to talk with the Thoroughbred folks in order to get those parts, right? And in order to get reimbursed for those parts later?
Yes, yes, Your Honor. There was testimony by the mechanic, Jerome Werner, who was perhaps the only mechanic that actually serviced the vehicle due to his prior experience actually servicing this type of vehicle. Even though he was a Ford mechanic, he had prior experience working on the Stallion vehicle, the vehicle that's subject to this action. And there was testimony from him that he was in contact with Thoroughbred regarding delivery of parts, as well as questions that he said that he did ask for schematics or perhaps an expansive technical manual. He did not receive it, but that when asked, Thoroughbred would provide fragments, drawings, or perhaps one or two pages out of what may have been a more expansive service manual.
Well, did Thoroughbred ever say, don't bring it there, or bring it back home, or bring it up here?
No, Your Honor, there was never any evidence or testimony entered in at trial that at any point did Thoroughbred ever say, do not take it to Ford. And in fact, the final time that Mr. Berzloff had his vehicle serviced, when it was at the Thoroughbred factory for a period of, I believe, 5 months, when his vehicle had not been picked up by Thoroughbred, Mr. Berzloff testified that he contacted Thoroughbred and said, why has my vehicle not been picked up? And Thoroughbred's initial response was, take it to Ford. We're not going to fix it. Take it to Ford.
But I thought, just to clarify, that there came a time when Thoroughbred said, you know, in fact, you're having too many problems with this. We want it back down in the plant in Texas so that we can really figure out what's wrong with it. And he said, no, I still want to ride it. It's still the riding season. They said, okay, well, I forget the exact times, but, you know, November or something. Wasn't there some sequence like that?
I believe it was. Yes, Your Honor, I believe it was November of 2010 when he had a face-to-face encounter, a face-to-face meeting with Mr. Jeffrey Bay, the president of the Thoroughbred, and he enumerated the many issues that he was having with the vehicle, and that then Jeffrey Bay, I believe it was president of Thoroughbred, agreed to transport the vehicle to Texas. It was never established that Mr. Berzloff said, I don't want you to take it now. I want to continue riding it. That was never established. Eventually, Thoroughbred did transport it back to Texas, where it was there for a period of months.
And at that point was fixed, I take it?
I cannot recall if the record supports testimony that Mr. Berzloff experienced issues after that. But regardless, that period was after the 1 year time limit of the lemon law statute, so it was irrelevant.
Who has it now?
Mr. Berzloff still retains possession of the vehicle, Your Honor.
Plus double damages?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I gather the statute has been amended recently?
Yes, I am aware that effective March 1st, 2014, that they have removed the double damage provision.
Did you, was there a Rule 50 motion in this trial, or did everybody just agree that this was going to go to the jury?
I believe that Attorney Cade, on behalf of Thoroughbred, did bring a Rule 50 motion, yes, Your Honor.
But you didn't on your side?
No, Your Honor.
Yeah, okay. I mean, not that you necessarily had to, I was just curious. And does the Magnuson Moss part of this case make any difference at this point?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The Magnuson Moss statute and Wisconsin's lemon law statute are so intertwined. The elements are so almost mirror each other. Therefore, if the jury was hearing the lemon law claim, they were, in effect, also hearing the Magnuson Moss claim. So that there was never at any point during trial where the jury thought or the jury was aware that they were hearing testimony or evidence that was particular to the Magnuson Moss claim.
But the instructions did present to the jury both the lemon law and the Magnuson Moss theories?
That's correct, Your Honor. There was the model jury instruction for the Magnuson Moss claim was included, and as well as within the special verdict form, separate and distinct from the Lemon Law portion of the verdict, there was also questions for the jury to determine regarding Magnus and Moss.
But as I understand it, it sort of fell out of the case in that the relief he got under the Lemon Law, at least from your perspective, was full and complete relief. There was no need to get any further relief under Magnus and Moss.
That's correct, Your Honor. The main focus, of course, was Lemon Law, given the penalty of
the damages,
double damages. Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. But it was fortunate that Magnus and Moss remained and was presented to the jury because it it gave me an opportunity to collect attorney's fees if they would not have been available under the Lemon Law.
Okay. I think that's, unless one of my colleagues has a question, I think that will do from our standpoint.
Anything else you want to tell us?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
No, Your Honor, that is, that concludes my argument. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Cade?
Yes, Judge, a couple of points. You raised the Magnus and Moss. That is an issue because as it went to the jury, Judge Goodstein made a point of saying, well, he could still get equitable relief. There was never, ever a request for equitable relief.
But that doesn't matter, of course, under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 54C, because the second sentence of that rule says that people are entitled to whatever relief the evidence warrants, whether or not they've asked for it.
Correct, Judge, but they had no damages, and then they had no equitable relief, and there was never, ever, after the fact, any request for some sort of equitable relief.
And he didn't get any relief. So, I mean, I don't see why you're making a big deal about this, because it seems to me that there's no injury to you from the jury being told. Now, had the jury bought your theory on the Lemon Law, maybe thought that there wasn't sufficient agency, Magnus and Moss, looking at it from the ex-ante perspective, might have come into play. As it happens, we now know with hindsight it didn't, but I don't see really anything to this point.
One other point I'd like to make, I did note this, and I think, again, as I stated, the prong that they try to recover on makes the vehicle available for repair by the manufacturer or authorized dealer. The word dealer has specific meaning in the Lemon Law. It's not just, hey, there's a guy down the street and he has a shop and you call that a dealer. It has specific language. So just because they authorized it to go to Ford, this amount of Ford, it's not a dealer. And if there was any questions about that, he could have, again, sued under the warranty. He had full availability.
That takes us back to my concern. Really, I guess it really seems to me that this is an estoppel problem under the statute. That is, if your customer calls you with problems and you direct him to a place other than an authorized dealer for repair, then you've authorized the repair by whoever he takes it to. And it would be a very odd reading of the statute to treat that following instruction of the manufacturer as having been having lost the rights of the consumer under the law.
Except, Judge, the evidence, as it was in the record, we didn't direct him to go to Ford. He called and said, Mr. Burzlaff called and specifically said, I've got a problem, and he mentioned the issue with Ford because he said, I read the warranty and he saw the Powered by Ford, and he said, can I take it to a Ford dealership? So he
His
made
testimony it. Was, I was told to take it to Ford.
There was other testimony, Judge, when he went through it that he said specifically, I called and he said that's the first time that he read the warranty and the first time that he decided. The reason he bought it is because he saw the authorized by Ford, powered by Ford, which he assumed meant that Ford was backing it instead
That's pretty
of,
natural, don't you think?
It could be, Judge.
Is that an argument Ford? On your side?
I'm sorry?
Is that an argument on your side?
The authorized by Ford?
Yeah, authorized or
powered,
the,
by,
powered
Ford,
by Ford.
Serviced by Ford.
Right. That's what Mr. Vey testified to. Every Ford dealership is individually owned. You can't make them do anything if it's not a Ford vehicle.
Of course not.
So, you know, a layman sees that, but it basically, all it is it's the same thing with, it gives you a bigger network than Harley-Davidson, for example.
What you're describing starts to sound like consumer fraud.
I don't think it's Judge, this is
you're different. You're giving your consumers, your prospective customers, the false impression that their vehicles will be available, that Ford dealerships will be available to service them.
Well, I disagree with the judge. If that was the case, they could have brought a false a consumer false claim act.
Well,
the
point here is that the Ford dealer did service, and now you're complaining about it, which I find very odd. So
we're not complaining the Ford dealership serviced a judge. We're complaining the fact that he wanted to go to Ford, he chose to go to Ford, and now he's turning around and saying, hey, I should get double damages when it's not an authorized dealer.
I think we have your point, both from the argument in your briefs and opposing counsel as well. So we thank you both, and the case will be taken under advisement.